Welcome to Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where we explore your nerdy side for half an hour. No, 1 hour every Monday at 9 p.m. here at radio.dominican.edu. I am your host, DJ Titania, and today we have a very interesting show. Three segments, as always. The first segment, our news segment, the Quibbler, we'll be talking about very interesting news today, very interesting video game releases this week. Next, we will be talking about the new, the old, and the ugly of Netflix series, because, of course, if you are updated with that, you know that in the weekend, Daredevil was released, and everyone who cares about it binge-watched it. I know I did. And in the last segment of the show, we will talk about The Hitchhiker's Guide to Trading Card Games. So stay tuned for that. All of that today in Nerd Nerd Nerdy. Let's start with a bit of news here in the Quibbler segment of the show. The first piece of news that I have for you today is that Guardians of the Galaxy screenwriter has been talked for the production of the Captain Marvel film. I mean, this is really exciting. The Marvel Universe films are really exciting, at least for the public in general, also for the nerds, but the public in general seems to enjoy them together with the nerds. Not only the nerds are being indulged, I mean. The co-writer Nicole Perlman and Pixar's Inside Out co-writer Meg LaFevre, those are the names that are court to pen Captain Marvel. And let's face it, Captain Marvel is a very interesting character if you know a bit about him. So the movie that is due for release in 2018, apparently Marvel's boss Kevin Feige had met with the writers separately, but liked both pitches so much that he combined them for the final film, creating a new writing partnership from the get-go. So, last month there were rumors that this movie had already been cast, but of course we don't know what the cast is yet. But apparently this is the final decision. And we will have this movie for 2018. Next, Mark Ruffalo is interested in developing, in being part of a Planet Hulk movie. Planet Hulk is one of the most interesting pieces in the Marvel Universe. And I think that Mark Ruffalo would bring some light, will shine some light into a standalone Hulk movie. Very unlike the previous Hulk standalone movies. And I think it would be very interesting. Hulk is a very, very interesting character, and Mark Ruffalo would be perfect for it. IGN was the one that was the one in charge of reporting this news. I mean, they spoke with Ruffalo in person and with Scarlett Johansson about the Avengers, the Age of Ultron, because the release date of these movies is very close. I mean, aren't we all excited about that? Aren't we? Yes, we are. And Ruffalo confessed that there were a lot of places that he wanted to go with Hulk. So, and IGN, of course, pitched in space. And Ruffalo said that if he's going to space, there will be talk about Planet Hulk. Ruffalo was the one that introduced the topic. And that's what I like about this. It's not that IGN was the one that introduced the topic, but it was Ruffalo that talked about it first. So that's very interesting. And indeed, it's something to watch out for in the future. Although the Marvel Universe is planned out for and already booked for at least 10 years from now on, but I mean, they could be planning out for this movie as they are doing for other movies, such as, I don't know, what was this movie again? I forgot. I will talk about it later on in the show. The third piece of news that I have for you today is that a Marvel editor left the company to start another rival company. We know how this ends in our minds, don't we? But the editor, Mike Martz, left the company to be editor-in-chief of course, the newly founded company. He was known for his work in Guardians of the Galaxy, X-Men, and This is Batman. And he's joining his former the former Marvel writer, Joe Puret, to form Aftershock Comics. I hope that we will see many exciting things from these two gentlemen. And, I mean, this is a very bold decision from them. Mart said on Twitter that he could not be more excited about his future and the creative adventures that lie ahead for him. And after years of honing his skills at the two best publishers in the business, I am breaking to build a fun, safe, created, a competitive new home. Mart reportedly left Marvel on good terms, just before the publisher is set to end the Marvel Universe as part of their big summer event called Secret Wars. I'm not so sure about his decision, but if that's what he wants, then he must honor his wishes. Next, very, very exciting, Ian McKellen is voicing Cogsworth in the live-action movie of The Beauty and the Beast. Sir Ian McKellen, oh my god, he's so amazing, and I'm so, so psyched that he is participating in a Disney film. He is one of my favorite actors of all time, and I mean, he portrays Gandalf, and he's Magneto, oh my god, my Spanish just crept on through there, but I just think he will do the most amazing role there, and I think he will do the best that he can, and he will be amazing, just as Maggie Smith. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, then please go home, you're drunk. Then I have for you a list of the games that will probably be in this year's E3. This is pretty exciting because, I mean, the E3 is right around the corner if we think about it. And there are a lot of games that I'm pretty excited about, pretty stoked about, and there are a lot of games that you may be pretty excited about. For example, Assassin's Creed Victory. That's not a game that I'm excited about, but it's there, guys. Let's face it. They're releasing two games per year for Assassin's Creed. They may at least beta test it before they release them. After the crash and burn they had with Unity, I mean, I don't have high hopes for this. That next we have Borderlands 3. That we have Deus Ex Mankind Divided that people are just blowing up in the internet for. We have The Division, something that is very, very popular right now. Doom, Fable Legends, Forza 3 that is confirmed. All of the others that I'm talking about are just not confirmed, I mean. They're suspected to be. Halo 5, Homefront 2, The Revolution, Kingdom Hearts 3, Tommy, I know you will like this, Just Cause 3, Lego, Jurassic World. What's with the Lego video games, guys? Mad Max, Mario Maker, for those of you who like Nintendo games, Mass Effect 4, the presentation is like last year's presentation, I'm gonna cry. I'm literally gonna cry. Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, Minecraft Story Mode. What's up with that? That's from Telltale, so that's gonna be, I don't know. I'm not tempted to say interesting. That's gonna be weird. Mirror's Edge 2. If that has a presentation that's similar to the one it has last year, just as Mass Effect 4, I will be pretty disappointed. I'm not gonna cry, but I will be pretty disappointed, as many of you probably will be too. No Man's Sky, so expecting that. Persona 5. If I could scream on the radio, I would. Quantum Break, very, very expecting that too. I mean, although it has been pushed back to 2016, guys, it's necessary. Let's face it. It's like with The Witcher, you just need to wait. Rise of the Tomb Raider, just please make that game stop. Shin Megami Tensei 10 Fire Emblem, what is that? I had never heard about that. I mean, of course I have heard about the Shin Megami Tensei games. I talked about them before in the show, but I had never heard about this game in particular that is a Wii U exclusive. What is that? Titanfall 2, of course, and Xenoblade Chronicles 10, Yoshi's Woolly World. I don't know why, but I'm really excited about Yoshi's Woolly World. Perhaps I will buy a Wii U just to play that. I mean, doesn't it sound like pretty and cute? And I don't know, I just wanna play that. I just like Yoshi very much. Don't judge me. Next up, DC. You know that DC had to move its offices in New York. After many, many years of being there, they just wanted to have to consolidate their offices in California for their offices just to be together. And they tweeted about that, and Marvel answered them with a gift, an emotional gift of Groot wiping away a tear from Rocket Raccoon's eye. That was pretty sweet from Marvel. I mean, it's a nice gesture, I guess. I wouldn't have expected it if I hadn't seen it. So that's pretty nice. Nice news if you think about it. If it's news at all, but it's nice to hear. The next piece of news I have for you today is that I spoke of this a few weeks ago, that the Xbox One had some problems with its startup and with its consumption of energy. Well, apparently Microsoft heard all the complaints. I mean, they probably listened to my show, of course. And they the Xbox One is going to offer an energy saving mode when they are start upping their console. So, this is very, very important for the planet, for the environment, and it's nice because a piece of news could change the mind or could make a very big company like Microsoft as regards gaming change its policy. So this means that users will no longer have to manually select the energy saving mode in the system's menus, and instead they will giving the option up front. So that's very, very good. I mean, it's not everything that they could be doing to make the Xbox One more energy efficient, but it's a step forward. In their statement, Microsoft claims that the energy mode selection will be updated in the coming months. So do not wait for it standing up. Just sit down, get a book, because it's not coming anytime soon. Next up, Scarlett Johansson is rumored to star in The Creature from the Black Lagoon. The remake from the 1954 classic has been in the making from Universal for many, many years. But there hasn't been a set cast and a set director, forever. So this is a start. It has been long in development, and at least they have found the lead actor. I mean, the lead actress in this case. In every case, because there cannot be a lead actor. But unless they do some weird stuff like they're doing in, I don't know, the Fantastic Four. But let's not talk about those creative licenses. But I mean, it's going to be great. Scarlett's is an awesome actress, but I don't know. I mean, why do they have to be so endemic with the actors and actresses among superhero movies? I mean, they could outcast some that, I don't know if that's the word, but outcast. I mean, cast outside of what's the universe of these actors and actresses. Scarlett has already been in Avengers and has already starred as Black Widow. Why do they want to make her star in another comic book movie? Why? I mean, it's not healthy for the comic book movies in general. That's what I believe. But if that's the company's decision, then just go ahead. There are a lot of young actresses that are very, very talented in my respect, and that would be as well suited for the part. But I mean, if that's what they want to go with, just go ahead. Now we have to address the big issue in the table, the expansions for The Witcher 3. I mean, I'm not mad about it, but it's weird. Why did they say that they would give out free DLCs, which they are doing, if they were planning on selling expansion packs? I do remember the era where the video games had these big expansion packs that added to the game, and that's why you paid for them. And I understand why DLCs developed from that. And that's not the basis, and that's not the soul of DLCs. I mean, they are different in essence. But it's bad policy in my respect. They should have been clear from the start from what they wanted from the game. It's already what seems to be a massive game, and they are adding more and more content. I mean, I don't know how they're going to live up to the expectations that we already have for this game. Because I'm expecting hours and hours and hours of gameplay, and single-player gameplay for that matter, and awesome gameplay. I mean, top-of-the-notch gameplay. And that's what I expected from Assassin's Creed Unity, and it did not deliver. So just saying, be aware of this. I know that The Witcher is not Assassin's Creed, and I'm making a very bad comparison right here. But still, bear with me, because that's what it is right now. And I'm just getting scared, you know? The expansions already have price, and they will be $25. And they are named Hearts of Stone and Blood and Wine. Hearts of Stone will be released in October 2015, and Blood and Wine has an early launch in early 2016, supposedly, of course. Finally, I will talk about the three releases of this week that are very, very interesting to me. Mortal Kombat X or 10, whatever you want to call it. GTA 5 for PC, at last. And this little indie game called Titan Souls. I mean, if you really liked pixel kind of games, very, very difficult, kind of you need to die a few bunch of times before you get to pass on to the next round, this is the kind of game for you. It's $14 on Steam, and the collector's edition is $18. And it seems that it's worth it. Everybody's very, very stoked about it. I don't need to talk about either Mortal Kombat or GTA. I guess that you already know what I'm talking about. But if you want some more information, the internet, in that respect, will be the hype right now. We're going on a little break, and then we're going to talk about the new, the old, and the ugly of Netflix original series. This is DJ Titania with Nerd Nerd Nerdy at radio.dominican.edu. Please stay tuned.
Dark, count mistakes, the light. Taking steps is easy, standing still is hard. Remember all their faces, remember all their voices. Everything is different the second time around.
That was Regina Spektor with You've Got Time, the theme song for Orange is the New Black, a Netflix original series. And that's the topic for this new segment of the show, The New, the Old, and the Ugly of Netflix original series. This is Nerd Nerd Nerdy, and I am DJ Titania at radio.dominican.edu, bringing you everything you need to know about the nerd life. Okay. Here we go. The New, the Old, and the Ugly of Netflix original series. Before I continue, I have to make a note. Netflix is going to make a series about How to Train Your Dragon, and it's going to be named Dragon's Rage to the Edge. I mean, isn't that amazing? I do remember every, like, the little series that Disney came out about Aladdin, for example, or The Little Mermaid. And every time the animation was, that. So, and I couldn't bear to watch them because they were so bad. But this time around, when I watched the trailer, the animation was really, really good. I mean, you can tell the difference, but it's not that bad. You can totally watch it. And I am going to totally watch it. I'm not ashamed to say it. But moving on to what I want to talk about right now is the new series, the new Netflix original series that just aired this past weekend, Marvel's Daredevil. And Netflix kind of gave the character a second chance to live, because we all thought it was dead after that 2003 movie with Ben Affleck, right? I mean, and that is why we are all very, very afraid of how Ben Affleck is going to portray Batman, right? I have my faith in him because I think that that was his part, not Daredevil. I mean, just listen to how he makes the voice. But Netflix, with this original series, kind of goes through the origins of Daredevil and how he becomes the superhero. It's like an X-Men Origins movie, but just blown out into 13 episodes. And it's worth to watch because you get to see another side of Marvel. We are used to getting these movies from Marvel where we laugh and they are not greedy at all. This time around, Daredevil is totally the opposite. Daredevil is the Batman of Marvel, and he is very dark. If he actually, when the theme and the opening were released before the series was aired, many people were scared and they were very, very unsure about the blood and the dark theme and the shadows that it threw over the character and over the franchise in general, because as I said, every one of us associates Marvel with happiness and with, we all associate superheroes with happy endings, and we all know that it's the path of the hero and the hero's gonna win in the end. But apart from that, it's struggles that makes Daredevil interesting, because he's not a god. And this is a cliche to say, but he's just a man, and he has powers, of course, but they are not by any means something that could not happen with the enhancements that we have today. I mean, we're not so far away from having a Daredevil between ourselves, between walking amongst ourselves. I mean, perhaps it is far-fetched, the fact that he is a martial artist and a boxer and everything like that, just like Batman, but the senses, the super senses that he has, they can be enhanced to that point. I mean, we cannot crawl through walls like Spider-Man, and I don't know if we will ever can, but if sci-fi is getting real, guys. So getting back to the point, Matt Murdock, and again with the double consonants here, Matt Murdock, he's a lawyer and he is blind, and when he's a child by a chemical toxic to his eyes, trying to save this old man, he becomes very much more aware of his surroundings by means of his ears, by means of the sense of smell, and he can see very differently and much more efficiently if you were to compare to someone that has the sense of sight. So he, to stop this suffering, this continuous suffering of the hearing of voices and the constant overstimulation that he has as a child, he's trained by this blind man that also went through the same thing. And he's turned into, as a child, into a killing weapon, basically. But obviously, he goes his own way because he is emotional and he is a child. And this is how he becomes Daredevil. Well, not how he becomes Daredevil, but how he becomes a trained professional. I'm not gonna spoil anything else, that's nothing major, but eventually he finds himself a lawyer in New York, in Hell's Kitchen in particular. This is kind of a dystopia. It's set kind of in a New York where everything went wrong, and kind of a New York in the 90s, let's say, but very much worse. And Daredevil, Matt Murdock, decides to take justice into his own hands because he knows that he can. And he starts following a mob, like the Russian mob. But he discovers that there's a lot more than the Russian mob behind what's going on to the city. The poison of the city is not just the Russian mob, and he becomes caught up in saving the city, and eventually he becomes Daredevil. He finds his own identity through fighting crime. So it's pretty amazing. I mean, I wasn't a skeptic at all. I just went in knowing that it was going to be great, because I have my whole faith in Netflix
as many of you know and share with me, I think that Netflix is kind of a company that has turned into the new cat of the internet. And as Valve is, Netflix is, as Valve is for gaming, Netflix is for movies and series. And although it has its shortcomings, there are things that you can't take away from the company. For example, its original series. And Daredevil is one of its standouts right now. So, I mean, you gotta give it to them. They know how to make content. If we continue and we talk about Orange is the New Black, this is my old recommendation, Orange is the New Black. And one of my best friends back in Argentina was raging about this since it came out. It already has 3 seasons and it premiered in 2003 in July. It's one of the seasons, one of the series that has gained most awards, let's say, for a television series as any other, let's say. And it is a comedy drama, and it was, as I said, released in 2014 in July. The second season released in 2014 and so on. But there was this this conflict where they wouldn't renew it for another season, and then the fans went crazy. Well, it turns out that the series revolves around Piper Chapman, that is a woman that lives in New York, who is sentenced to 15 months in prison. She is then convicted of transporting a suitcase full of drug money to her former girlfriend, Alex Boss, an international drug smuggler mule. The offense had occurred 10 years prior to the start of the series, and in that time, Piper had moved on to a quiet, law-abiding life among New York's upper middle class. So her sudden and unexpected arrest seriously disrupts her relationships with her fiancé and her family. In prison, Piper is reunited with Alex, who might or might not have named Piper in her trial, resulting in her friend's arrest. And they re-examine their relationship and deal with their fellow prisoners. The show often shows flashbacks, and these flashbacks may explain how the inmate came to be in prison, or further develop the character's backstory. Orange is the New Black generated more viewers and hours viewed in its first week than the other Netflix original series House of Cards and Arrested Development, so that's also pretty big. But what Orange is the New Black is known for, it's because it's almost like a lesbian drama. And there's a lot of one-on-one girl scenes. And that's why a lot of men watch it. But it's also pretty interesting, so you should give it a chance. I also must recommend to you House of Cards, because although Orange is the New Black did surpass House of Cards in viewers, it is very very well known that House of Cards is very good. I mean, it has Kevin Spacey. Let's be honest. Kevin Spacey is the best thing that ever happened. House of Cards is a political drama. So if you're not into political dramas, do not stay away, because that's all there is. It is an adaptation, in fact, from a miniseries produced by the BBC that has the same name. And both of them are based on the novel by Michael Dopps, also of the same name. The entire first season has 13 episodes and aired February 1, 2013. House of Cards has been renewed for a fourth season. So all of these years, for 2014 and 15, there have been new seasons for you to watch. So you can binge watch on all of these series, guys. You have a lot of catching up to do. And House of Cards, as I said, has been renewed for a new season, a fourth season, which will premiere next year. And although the director, Willeman, stated that plans for the show's future are decided each season, Kevin Spacey estimates, and I trust Kevin Spacey, that the show will have 12 seasons in total. And that's a lot. I mean, that's, I don't know, like a Law and Order. The series is set in present-day Washington, and it's the story of Frank Underwood, that it's Kevin Spacey, of course, and that's a Democrat from South Carolina. And he is trying to become more influential on the state. Of course, that's everything that a political drama portrays, but I don't need to tell you that. The themes of the series are ruthless pragmatism, manipulation, power. It's very, very interesting if you're bored or sick or just want to watch something new, because Kevin Spacey. It was also, it received 9 Primetime Emmy Award nominations, and it was the first original online-only web television series to receive major Emmy nominations. So that's very, very interesting. And the only Netflix original series that I don't recommend is Marco Polo. Yes, Marco Polo. Marco Polo is an American drama series that, of course, it's about Marco Polo's early years in the court of Kublai Khan, the Khagan of the Mongolian Empire and the founder of the Juan dynasty, which lasted, almost 100 years in the 13th century. The show premiered in 2014, December last year, and the series was written and created by John Fusco. The star is Lorenzo Richelmi, which is really, really nice. Really, really nice. But the series is not worth watching in general, although it was renewed for a second season. It is. They had a lot of issues because they wanted to film in China and they couldn't. And I think that's what made them stutter in the filming. And that's what made the writing a little bit poor for me. The characters are not well-rounded. I really like fantasy and I really like historical drama. And this is kind of a mixture of both. But it's gorgeous. The filming is gorgeous. It has vistas. It has costuming that is very, very meticulous. And the action is impressive. But the story is really not compelling at all. The characters are flat, and you really don't care about them. But the camera work and the cinematography are worth looking for. If that's what makes you what makes you really like a series, even if you don't like anything else. Now I'm gonna leave you with another song. And this little break, and after the break we're going to talk about The Hitchhiker's Guide to Trading Card Games. This is DJ Titania, and this is Nerd Nerdy at radio.dominican.edu. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Kurt, and that was me and the amazingly talented Lindsay Sterling doing a little remix of the Pokemon.
Yes, that was Lindsay Sterling, okay. But this is Nerdy, and I am DJ Titania at radio.dominican.edu. And now we're going to talk about trading card games. This segment of the show is called The Hitchhiker's Guide to Trading Card Games. I mean, who hasn't been in contact ever to a trading card game? I know I have, at least. And for those of you who don't know what a trading card game is at all, I'm going to define it a little bit, because perhaps you are confused about it. A trading card game is also called a collectible card game or a customizable card game. It is a kind of card game that first emerged in 1993 with Magic the Gathering, and we're going to talk about in detail about Magic the Gathering in a little bit. It consists especially of designed sets of playing cards, and its rudimentary definition requires the game to resemble trading cards in shape and function, be mass-produced for trading or collectibility, and it must have rules for strategic gameplay. Think of it as chess that you can collect. So let's say that you wanted to have different kinds of chess pieces, and you could mix and match them because these different chess pieces were better because of different reasons, or you liked the way they moved, or you liked them because they were shiny. That's what a collectible card game or a trading card game is. And you can also further define a TCG trading card game by saying that the player uses his deck of cards primarily cards that are sold in random assortments. What does this mean? That you may buy a deck that is built already for you, but the way that you build a deck of cards is by buying boosters of cards that come at random. I mean, you don't know what card you're buying when you buy a booster of cards. This is a characteristic of trading card games. And you may also acquire a specific card, but cards are given a cost specific to the card and the value it has within the game. You can also trade cards with other players, but that's not really common, and that's exactly what you do. And Magic, for example, has 15,000 cards. There are many more games that you can play with Magic. And initially, you play a trading card game with a starter deck, as I said before. You buy a deck that's specifically designed to be easier to play. It's introductory, and in that way, you will feel more comfortable when you are learning to play the game, because the types of cards that it has in it are not so special, are not so particular in the types of rules they use, that it will be too hard for you to understand in the first time you play. So this is very standard. And then from the starter deck, what usually happens is that if you like the game, you buy a booster or two, and then you start changing up your starter deck so that you can have a deck that is your own and that you can feel comfortable with, because there's not one way only to play a trading card game. That's also a characteristic of them, that they are very unique in the way you play them. Also, a characteristic of these games compared to what they were based on is that a player cannot buy all the cards at once. Before trading card games, something that was similar and something that Richard Garfield based himself to create Magic the Gathering was baseball cards. So when we look at baseball cards, we can see that there's no strategic gameplay behind them, or that you can trade them, but there's nothing else about them. In that case, we cannot consider them a trading card game. But they had been around throughout all the 20th century. They were around all the 20th century. But what is intrinsically different about trading card games is that not only they players couldn't buy all the cards at once, like it happened with baseball cards, but they also had to know how to play the game to be able to for these cards to have meaning apart from the art they had in them, or for the value they had for trading. They also needed to be able to know how to use them in the gameplay. There are also many games that are similar, many products that are similar. There are living card games that are... There are games that do not require your decks to be customized. But these kinds of games do not categorize as trading card games or collectible card games. Because for a trading card game to be a trading card game, you need to have the ability to change your deck. And for this to be meaningful within the within the gameplay itself. So if I change my deck, it needs to mean something. It needs to be better, worse, or just change the gameplay in general. Moving along, the trading card games have a system that is fundamentally different and is generally coherent in all trading card games. They have a set of rules that describe objectives and categories of cards that are used in the game. These basic rules define how the cards interact between each other. Each card will have additional text that explain that specific card's effect on the game. They also generally represent specific elements that are derived from the game's genre, setting, or source material. This will all become clearer when I present an example that will be Magic the Gathering in this case. The cards are generally illustrated and named for this source elements, and the card's game function may relate to the subject. So if we take, for example, Magic the Gathering, that is based on the fantasy genre, many of the cards represent creatures and magical spells from the setting. The bulk of trading card games are designed around a resource system by which the pace of each game is controlled. That is to say that we have different stages of the game that happen in all trading card games. First of all, the players' decks are considered a resource, and the frequency of cards moving from the deck to the play area or player's hand are tightly controlled. You cannot do whatever you like in the game. It is not as you see, for example, in the Big Bang Theory, where they just have cards in their hand and they throw it on the board, on the table. That is not how you play a trading card game. They do have the basis of it, where a card is meaningful over other cards, but that's not how you play a trading card game. For example, in a game, players take turns. So it's a turn-based game. And within a turn, you have different phases. So there's a ready phase, where you draw a card, you prepare your board. There's a draw phase, where you draw a card from your deck, where there's a main phase, where you use the cards in your hand to interact with the game. There's a combat phase, where, of course, you combat, you attack, or you defend, and then you end your turn, so you do whatever you need to do in your board to end the turn. This is common to almost every trading card game. So that's something that's basic. Also something that's very basic and common to every card game is that cards are divided and produced in different degrees of scarcity. So cards are denoted by common, uncommon, and rare. Also, they could be denoted by unrare, by very, very rare, super, ultra, mythic rare, exclusive rares. There can be cards that are only gifted to players that win a certain contest or attend a certain event, for example. The idea of rarity also implies that rarer cards are more powerful in the game, and in this it also denotes that when, for example, in Magic, when you release a game 1 year and then another year you release an expansion, you can change a card's rarity because you understand that its effect is much more powerful than you have foreseen. Also, as I had said, most trading card games are distributed in sealed packs that contain a subset of available cards, much like trading cards that you may know as baseball cards. And some of the most common distribution methods are a starter set, a starter deck, a theme deck or a tournament deck, and booster packs. So you may buy, as I said, decks that are already made for you and that are special in some way for some special reason. For example, they might be a starter deck, or they might be an event deck, or they might be, I don't know, some kind of deck that is related to a special occasion. For example, the release of a new type of card, something like that. And then you have booster packs. In the case of Magic, they come with 15 cards. And some other games, they come with less. But that's the industry standard. And now I'm going to talk about very briefly about what Magic the Gathering is. Magic can be played with two or more players, and you have to have 60 or more cards. You can also play the video game, and you can buy it on Steam. Magic 2015, it's $10 right now. And you can play with other players, and actually that's very, very enjoyable, although it's different from collecting cards and having them in your hand, but that's also much more expensive, so it's your choice. In the case of Magic, that it's a fantasy-based game, it was first conceived as something that would be sold with Dungeons & Dragons, but it turned out to be its own game in its entirety. And each game represents a battle between wizards known as planeswalkers. You travel as a planeswalker between these different planes of Magic, and you employ spells, artifacts, and creatures that are depicted in individual cards to defeat your opponent. Although the different cards are different to get you. I don't know. You may. I got tongue tied. Moving right along. There's also a very organized tournament system and a community of professional Magic players, because it has been around so long and it was the first trading card game. It's the most organized community. I mean, I'm from Argentina, and there are tournaments in Argentina. So you see how far away this has gotten. And there's a secondary market for Magic cards. So Magic cards can be valuable because of their rarity and utility in gameplay, as I said. And they can be sold for a few bucks to thousands of bucks, thousands of dollars, few hundred dollars. They can be sold for a lot of money if you get the right card in a booster pack. It's insane. But also, if you play, you may want it for yourself. I mean, it's very hard. In a game of Magic, you engage in this battle and you have life points that you lose when you're attacked. And you may also lose these points if your library, your deck, reaches zero. You also have five colors that are white, blue, black, red, and green. And they represent different types of magic, at different kinds of spells, and different ways of playing the game. So there are people that prefer to have an all-red deck, or an all-green deck, or an all-black deck, and people that prefer to mix and match colors to have a different effect on the game. I personally really like red-green decks, but that's my personal preference, because I cannot wait, and red has that ability. But it's really your personal preference. And if you are interested in getting into that, you will be able to. It's just a matter of practicing. Also, if you don't want to get into buying the cards physically, and you don't like the idea of having a game that's made out of physical cards, you may also buy Hearthstone, not buy because it's a free-to-play game, but you may also invest in Hearthstone, that it's a Wizards of the Coast, Milena. It's a Blizzard game that's based on the World of Warcraft lore. And it's a TGC, it's a CGC, a collectible card game. But essentially, it's a free-to-play game, and you buy booster packs through the web if you want to buy them. And what is unique about Hearthstone is that if you don't want a card, you can dismantle it, and eventually you can craft a card that you want with what remains of the card. What Blizzard wanted to do with this is to avoid a second market for cards, because they wouldn't get any money from it, basically. So, but it gets, there's a lot of people that play Hearthstone right now, and it's I don't know, it's very popular. I didn't play it, but it is very popular. That was all for today, guys. I hope you liked it. We'll listen to each other again next Monday at 9 p.m. here at radio.dominican.edu. I am DJ Titania, and this was Nerd Nerd Nerdy.